This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 565 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Total Saddle Fit, and Bait Saddles. On tonight's show, we have a plethora of guests. U.S. team rider Olivia Lagoy-Welts gives us her pandemic update. We're happy to have Lendon Gray join us. We will interview author Sandra Beaulieu about her book on how to create a great freestyle. And Patty Mayer is back for a discussion all about third level.
This is Reese Koffler Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Reese. How's it going this week?
Did somebody tell me it's your birthday?
Yes.
Happy birthday, pandemic birthday.
And you're with birthday us. Is not that much fun. I'm going to tell you that.
Well, you said there's a package that arrived. So I am dying to know what's in your package. So, but happy birthday. Seriously. Cheers.
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 To all the listeners.
Thank
you know, there's lots of positive things, you know, still happy and healthy, and my family is doing well, and the horses are doing well. And I mean, there's some good news, right?
Yeah, yeah, there's lots of good news. Exactly. And you're back riding again, right?
Doing some workouts still.
Yeah. How was your workout going, Phil?
We started with first week. I was like, all right, I can manage this. And then second week,
it's getting real.
You know,
I got a few nasty text messages. The person shall remain nameless, but it was along the lines of how much she hated me. I was like, oh, good, it's working. But no, actually, everybody who's playing along with us, or you don't know what we're talking about, we are, as a community, doing the dressage rider training from Nicola Smith in New Zealand. And we're on week two. This is a 12-week journey. We're all on it together. I'm not going to lie. I was doing my core the other day. Yeah. Ooh.
I discovered something.
What?
I can't squat.
Oh, yeah, it's harder.
I don't know what it is. I was like,
really?
I'm talking to Nicola. And like, I'm doing the workouts. I'm talking to
Nicola.
I'm talking to Nicola. And then she's like, and then you just do this. And I'm like, I've never tried to do that. First of all, let's give it a go. And I like fell over.
I love it. You called Nicola on a squat. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Poor Nicola. Like, she deals with all of us.
And she's just like, and you could practice this while you put on polos. I'm like, I'm not going to practice this while doing
polos. Oh, you were doing the Hindu squat. You're doing the real low one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. That's what she did. She's just like, and you just do this. And
that one is tough. I don't, if anybody knows what we're talking about, you literally are like way low. And it took me a long time to do that one because I have a bad knee. So I had to be real careful in the beginning. Nicola, she's great. Like, she gives you like different levels. And
she's like, if you can't quite get down, I'm like, this is as far I go, Nicola. This is it. And it's really a sad thing at the moment. But
we were talking to her on the video. You didn't call her.
No, I didn't call her. You have to have it.
Oh, I talk to Nicola all the time and it's not nice.
I was like, I can't do that. We should work on that. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's my experience.
I love it. It's going well for you too. No, that one's a tough one. Yeah. No, I've done it before, so I kind of have a fairly decent idea.
Got a way head start.
I've done DRT 1 and 2 and I got hurt when I was doing 3, so I got bucked off, so I had to stop, and that one's hard. So I get it. So I'm right there with you, but I knew what was coming. That's the, you kind of like know what's coming. It's, I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah. But for everybody who's playing along with us, seriously, send Phil and I emails. We think they're funny. Like I said, my students that are doing it with me did not send nice ones this week. So, but we love it. So yeah, it's part of the fun being in a pandemic, trying to do things together. And yeah, here in Kentucky today is a nice day, but it's supposed to snow here tomorrow. So yeah. It's going to be
here really too. Cool. The weather's not helping out.
Yeah, no, tomorrow it's supposed to snow. It's May. Like, why is it snowing? So that's really tough. But today it's sunny. It's really beautiful. It's really green here. And we had Derby over the weekend. That was really sad for us. We had a Zoom call with a bunch of friends and that was fun, but
okay.
Yeah. It just wasn't the same. So, but we hope everyone's doing well and you are staying positive wherever you are. And if you're able to ride, you're really working on those basics. We have a great conversation with Lyndon Gray. And we have a really, actually a fairly long show and we're really proud
of it. It's a big show. We're happy to be able to get a bunch of guests on our program because, you know, a lot of people are sitting at home and not running around, you know, just like you and I. So, we were able to grab people and we're like, okay, well, we're just going to do some extra long shows and have extra guests and, you know, do our best to bring some entertainment to our listeners.
Exactly. So we hope you enjoy the show. We're going to get started right after this commercial break from USDF.
Founded in 1973, the United States Dressage Federation has become the largest organization to represent a single Olympic equestrian discipline. At nearly 30,000 members strong, USDF is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org to learn more about USDF education, competition, and award programs, and to shop our online store. Again, that's usdf.org, your online destination for dressage.
Well, tonight it is truly an honor to have Lyndon Gray on our program. She really doesn't need an introduction. She's an international rider and trainer. And Lyndon, we're so happy to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, Reese. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, I know. We were saying, you know, right now during the pandemic, normally we could never get you. You're so busy in Florida and in New York. So this is a bonus for us for sure to get you on the show.
Well, I wish I had more to do, but I'm hiding out in New York at the moment.
Well, that's a good thing. And we wanted to talk because you've started Dressage for Kids and Teachers for Training and the WIT program in Florida. And you really are such a great person because yesterday it was announced that the North American Youth Championships has been canceled for this year. And I saw a lot of sad faces on Facebook. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that and how we can keep everyone's spirits up? This one was a tough one for me, too. I was sad.
Well, it's for those who have been gearing their years to try to get to the North American Championships. It's a huge disappointment. But I look at it as a wonderful opportunity to step back a little bit and really go over what you're doing with your horse, what one is doing with one's horse, what the training is, perhaps back off a little bit of the pressure for those people who have been able to ride regularly, and step back and fill in the little blanks. I mean, we all know that when we're competing and getting ready to compete, we're often sort of covering up a problem, making it work, making it look right. And now we have a chance to step back and just take your horse out the next day and do basic walk, trot, and canter and see how truly, truly correct everything is. Is the horse honestly reaching down to the bit or is the rider pulling him together? Is the rider able to keep the leg quiet because the horse is truly in front of the leg and the rider's not having to kind of kicky, kicky, kicky to keep him going? Or holding the head down with the right hand or whatever it might be. We now have a chance to go back and fill in those blanks that perhaps we've been ignoring or covering up or pretending aren't there or whatever. And the other thing that, you know, I've loved watching on Facebook and Instagram and so forth, seeing people that are kind of having more fun with their horses. in the downtime.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I've seen that too. More hacking videos, silly video, you know, like the, I don't know if you've seen that, like toilet paper challenges.
And that was my favorite.
And, you know, I think so many people, and particularly when you're gearing up towards a major competition, we've lost a little bit of that, just enjoying our horses. And so how unfortunate it is not to have these championships this year. You know, we can take a moment to really reevaluate what we're doing and where we're at, and let our horses enjoy themselves a little bit more as we step back and really look at our basics. And then, of course, next year you're going to be even better because you have filled in those blanks.
Yeah. And I think that could go for anyone who, you know, I think it's up in the air right now, what's going to happen with showing, et cetera. And you don't have to be shooting for the Young Rider Championships. This is for everybody.
Exactly.
No, it's really universal, really. So Lyndon, tell us about the Dressage for Kids program, because if you are a mom and you have a kiddo or you're involved with a kiddo, tell us about that program. It's a fantastic program.
Well, it started as a show, and it still has one large show in New York. We don't know if it's going to happen this year in August. The one in Michigan has been postponed for this year, and the one in Atlanta, outside of Atlanta, is in the fall. So hopefully that'll still happen. But everything in Dressage for Kids is geared towards education. So even the show, which has where they do a dressage test and they do a group equitation class, where of course the horse doesn't count so much. We're trying to level the playing field as much as possible. And then everyone has a written test, counts as much as the dressage test, on assigned reading. And every year the reading assignments are different. So, and at the show, there are other educational programs. And then gradually that started in 1999, where one of our first competitors, who was second in her first dressage competition, was Laura Graves, who will tell you that that's kind of gave her the boost to get going. We're very proud of that. But then we've branched out into other educational activities, including a program we do in Connecticut in the winter of lectures. We have now what's called the TEAM program, TEAM, which stands for Training, Education, and Mentoring. And that normally is the main part of that are clinics all over the country. And we had 27, I believe, scheduled, of which so far they've all been canceled, of course. Have no idea when that'll start out. But we also send out educational material to that group. And they often have opportunities that come up. People will contact me, you know, they want some kids to do one thing or another. And then expanding from the TEAM program, mostly thanks to Kim Van Kampen, we have had the Winter Intensive Training Program, which I think is the best thing I've done. It's 3 months of education in Florida, lessons 5 days a week, fitness 6 days a week, lectures 6 days a week, kind of like a TEAM program that goes on for 3 months, because in the TEAM clinics, it's not just lessons, but also lectures. And, you know, kids have to bandage correctly and braid correctly and this and that, and they have to watch all the other lessons. So the winter program has been, I think, a huge success and has given a lot of kids a big boost. And then as we got going early on and we made a little bit of profit, we couldn't, from our show, we wondered, well, what do we do with the money? So we started a scholarship program, and that has expanded tremendously. And anyone who has participated in a Dressage for Kids activity, they can have come to the show and been dead last. It doesn't matter. They just have to have participated, is eligible to apply for a scholarship for something with equestrian education, lessons, clinics, going to a symposium. We've even helped to fund the research for 3 college theses that related to horses.
Wow.
And riding. So, and those scholarships are usually sort of $300 to $600, something like that. And then we have two other scholarship programs, one in the name of Courtney King Dye, for riders or anyone who's been helpful to D4K or participated in D4K when they compete internationally. So we've given several thousand dollars to people for the Pan American Games, for one Olympics, for the World Cup, major international competition. And then there we have a fund in the name of Christian Kennedy, who was a young man killed a couple of years ago, to assist. That has three different parts to it, one of which is to have a rider come to Wellington for 3 months, and Oded Shimoni donates his lessons to this rider. And that's sort of an all-expenses-paid opportunity.
Wow.
And then sort of the other big part of it, because we are a 501c3, which means people can donate to us with a tax deduction, we've also had horses donated to us. And we funnel these horses out to, we try to find the right rider for any horse that's offered to us. And they lease the horse from us. And these horses, we've had about 60 horses donated now over the years. And they're everything from little old ponies that help kids learn to ride a horse on the bit and do a 20-meter circle to, well, a horse that represented the United States last year in the in Europe as a young rider. And we've had a couple that have won the North American Championships. So that's given some kids a huge boost.
That's a huge program.
And it's so great that there is a wide range of riders that you're supporting, not just the top level athletes, but you know, all juniors, you know, all young people that want to learn more about dressage and you know, learn to ride dressage at all levels. I think that's really fantastic and important.
We really look for the beginning rider. I love the team clinics because I've had them as young as six or seven, you know, right up through Grand Prix. But we're really looking for the kids that don't have the opportunities. I mean, if you've got parents that can support you and you've got a wonderful horse, you're welcome to our program, but you perhaps don't need us quite so much. Whereas I think we've been able to really give a boost to kids that live in areas where they can't get much, you know, there aren't instructors around, or, you know, never thought they come and I can say, you know, you should work a little harder. You can do this. You do a good job. You've got a nice horse. Go for it. And nobody's ever really encouraged them or challenged them to, be better. So, you know, that's really our goal. Our goal really is to try to level the playing field as much as possible.
Yeah,
you know, help out those that need the help.
It's a phenomenal program. And Lyndon, you also did a fantastic program this winter in Wellington that helped, that I really enjoyed. It was Sunday. It was, I think, every other Sunday night. It was teachers for trainers for training. Tell us about that. That was a fantastic
training
program.
For teaching.
Oops,
T for
sorry.
T. Okay. Well, that's been something I've been working on for a long time. I mean, I think, I don't know about you, but I started teaching as most people do. I started teaching because I rode fairly well and I knew absolutely zilch about teaching. I just got out there and kind of taught the way I'd been taught and took me a while to realize that other people weren't necessarily like me and didn't learn the same way. And I was a pretty awful teacher for a very long time. And I think that's, I don't mean people are awful teachers, but most people, riders, they have no education in teaching. They know how to ride. And some of them are very, very good at the explanation and developing the eye and all of that. But others really should stick to riding, let's face it. So
jump in and just say, I think a part of the problem is that it's almost impossible to make, like in North America, to make a living by only riding. Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
There's lots of wonderful
yes,
sponsors
exactly.
out there, but I mean, this was my situation as well, is like you're a little bit forced to teach because people say, oh, you're a good rider. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then that becomes part of your business, whether you like it or not. And, you know, I myself are in the same way. You kind of fumble around and you do your best, and eventually you learn a little bit here, you learn a little bit there. But I mean, if we had more programs like the train the trainers kind of idea, that would be wonderful.
Well, that's what I had done it in a small way up here in the winter, you know, with some lectures, but we decided, along, Allie Brock helped me out as well, to make a little program down there. And my plan had been, maybe we could get 20 people and we'd sit in somebody's living room and I'd offer them food, because you need to offer food to get people to come. And that was going to be fine. And then we had, I think almost 80 come to the first. We basically, every time we're between 65 and 80 people. So it became a bit overwhelming, and thank goodness for Toonie Page and Still Meadow, right? Yes.
Still Point Farm,
who picked up and sponsored it, because it's just the expense of the food, not to mention the fact that we had to rent a high school library to hold it. But I was thrilled with the response, and Reese, you were there. And we had everybody from, 16-year-old kids who weren't really teaching yet to some Olympians. I mean, it was fantastic. And then all of our speakers donated their time. So what the plan had been this summer, we'll see whether it happens, is when I was traveling to do these team clinics all over. In some places, we were going to do some sort of a Friday session if the clinic was on the weekend, the day before, for teachers, for teaching. Again, we'll see what happens this summer. But trying to expand it in some way and encouraging. Dressage for Kids has done, I think, a lot of nice things. We have a wonderful committee. We have a lot of people all over who help us tremendously. But I feel we have no proprietary feelings about what we do. And I really hope that people see what we do and steal it and do it themselves. Because we can only do so much. And the programs that are successful, it would be fabulous if other people would expand, take them on and do it their way. This training for teaching, it's so needed in this country. And obviously there's interest.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. And what's also fantastic about your programs are you really just had to show up and eat. And there was no, exactly. You just sent an email, said, I'm coming, you RSVP'd. And it was great. And it became a really fun group. We had to cancel the last one, obviously, because of the coronavirus. But I hope we get to do it again next year. And it's going on my schedule because it energized me. It gave me some great tips that I needed. And at that part of the season down there, it's really intense. So it's nice to have some time just to get a little better at your job, and we can all get better at our job. But
Lyndon, I was just going to say that I think that, dressage should be a collaborative project. We can all lift each other up, because of the competitive aspect of it, we sort of get, especially now, we get sort of stuck at our own barns, at our own things. And, we see our friends at a horse show and then we go home the more programs and the more ideas that involve everyone, the better. I mean, exactly. We can all pull towards the same goal, right? We all want to be better teachers. We all want to be better riders. We all want to do better for our horses. And, that's not the island technique doesn't work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. Very much so. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we've taken so much of your time tonight and we're so thankful. How can our listeners, if they have a kid, or how can they find just information on Dressage for Kids?
Well, we have a website, Dressage for Kids. That's the number 4, dressageforkids.org, which has all of our programs on it. And then our show has its own website, which is youthdressagefestival.com.
you're having updates on those as well, right? That where people can find updates.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Lyndon, please stay well, and I hope to see you soon somewhere. Who knows? Hopefully Florida at least next
who
year.
Who knows? Yeah. Thank you.
Well, that was a fantastic interview with Lyndon, and we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we're going to have a quick break from Bates Saddlery, and then we'll come back with Sandra B., our author of this month's book club book.
Bates Saddles offer highly specialized saddles for every discipline, engineered to bring out the best in you and your horse. Underneath the finest European leather, you will feel the power of innovation. For you, the rider, enjoy instantaneous comfort, optimal balance, and seamless contact with your horse, leaving you free to concentrate on your aids. For your horse, the Care Cushion System and Easy Change Fit solution ensure the absolute comfort and your peace of mind. Revolutionize your riding experience and fulfill your true potential by riding in a Bates saddle. See your local retailer for a test ride or visit batessaddles.com to find out more. That's batessaddles.com.
Well, tonight I am so excited to have our author for our book club book this month. We're very excited to have Sandra Beaulieu. She is the author of Freestyle, The Ultimate Guide to Riding and Training and Competing to Music. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Hello. It's so nice to talk to you.
Okay. Say your last name again because we practiced and I think I forgot it.
It's great. There's many ways to say it. So Beaulieu is how I ask people to say it, but it's fine. You can just call me Sandra B. is fine.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a dressage trainer. I live in Florida now, but I grew up in Maine, and I've just been in love with horses my whole life. And I just kind of grew into the freestyle avenue as I, you know, as my life progressed. I definitely followed the very serious dressage track for a very long time. And then I kind of, you know, over the years figured that my personality was a lot better suited for creative, fun, artistic things. So I kind of always gravitated towards dressage to music and exhibitions and then theater. And so I now have my dream job here in Florida, and I train Baroque horses, Frisians, Andalusians, and Warlanders at Little River Frisians in Havana. So I am definitely living my dream job here in Florida right now.
Oh, that is awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic. So tell us, how did you get into freestyles? Like, what started this?
Yeah, well, my first memory of freestyle, like very inspiring, was watching Robert Dover on TV on the Washington International Horse Show doing his One Moment in Time exhibition. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did. It was awesome.
Like, everybody has seen that. And it was back before YouTube, and, you know, there was no cell phones, basically. Like, this was on VHS tape recorded off ESPN on the television. So, you know, I used to watch that video every single day when I was in seventh grade. That was like the year I was like driven, you know. And so he inspired me to, my goal was to ride my own One Moment in Time freestyle when I graduated high school. And I actually did. So I trained really hard all through school. And then I was able to take my horse over to the school, and the whole student body came out and watched me perform a freestyle in my top hat and tails. And I'm sure they had no idea what I was doing, but it was very like a dream come true. And I got to tell Robert Dover when I saw him in the, you know, later on years down the road. And so that was like my first big freestyle, you know, thing that I always love to tell people, because so many people have watched that freestyle. It gives you goosebumps when you watch it, you know? So that was my first one. And then the place that I learned to ride was amazing, because the trainer, she had so many kids riding, and she wanted them to be inspired to learn dressage. But, you know, young kids are, you know, dressage is a little serious, a little hard to learn. So she created play on horseback. So she did, and she's featured in my book. She's my instructor that I had for a really long time. Her name's Carolyn Rose, and she has this beautiful little farm in Maine. And she started this theater, And so we would take all the things we learned in dressage, and then we would perform kind of like a recital every year. But it just grew and grew and grew. So every year it expanded, and we had quadrilles of horses, up to 14 horses in this tiny little indoor arena. And then we had, you know, we'd act out our plays of, and all the costumes were amazing. And we just had such a great time. So that was my love for dressage to music as well, you know, adding the elements that you now do for like exhibition freestyles. And I learned how to edit music, but that was in the beginning, was on cassette tapes. You know, you're recording, you have the two different ones, and you pause and you play, and, you know, and you're trying to cut music like not on a computer. So that was kind of how us like kids, us teenagers, used to create these soundtracks, you know. So that was really fun to kind of like get down in the nitty gritty of it. And you just, you know, you get it done, you have fun, and you inspire people. And the way you can make people feel with the horses is so dramatic. And, you know, I love competing too, but there's not that connection with people that there is when you add the music and you add, you know, perhaps a costume or tell a story. So that's why I've always loved freestyle. So it really helped me learn how to ride dressage in a better way, because it helps you be a little bit more in flow, and it takes your mind off the seriousness of it, you know, gets you out of your head a little bit, because you got to listen to the music and feel the beat in your body. A lot of people like myself who love dressage are also very kind of type A and get a little bit, you know, thinking too much, and really like horses really like it when you're a lot more in the moment, a little more zen, and allowing the energy to flow. And so that's how I feel that music is also very helpful as well.
So yeah, it sounds like that was an amazing program and an amazing inspiration. So then you know, you've been riding, you've been doing freestyles. You also do like non-competitive events as well.
Oh, correct? I love doing that. I do love competing, and I do help people with their freestyles and helping them get their bars, their USDF bars, but I kind of like my like creative side, I really prefer being able to be way outside the box, you know, and not have to do always this particular routine, and adding the liberty or the bridleless or the tricks, you know, with the dressage. And I find that a lot more fun for myself, but I kind of do a little bit of all of it. That's why I included a section in my book on like exhibition riding, because I didn't really see anything else in the market for that. And that's kind of the reason I actually wrote the book, is I just was looking online, and I, you know, I couldn't really find anything for freestyle except stuff that was pretty outdated, you know, from like the 80s and 90s. And a lot of it didn't touch on any of the new software that you can use nowadays, or addressed choreography that was for the new tests, you know, for USDF or WDAA. So that's kind of how I started. I did eBooks first, and just for choreography and helping people. And those are, you know, pretty popular. I knew that there were a lot of people that needed help, and all my students were like, I want to ride a freestyle. That's my big goal in life. And they just didn't see people taking action, because it's very overwhelming, the whole process. So I thought, just, and okay, I'll try to write a book, you know. And it was, you know, definitely an experience to write a book, and took a couple years, the whole process. And I just really hope that it helps people kind of get over that initial, you know, diving in and giving it a try. Because your first one is not going to be that great, you know, but at least you do it and you get in there and you learn. And, you know, and that's where like most of the amateurs are at, is they might not have the money to actually pay a professional to create a freestyle for them, but they really want to do it. So, you know, this will kind of help them through that period of time, and see if they really like it. And then maybe they would hire a professional later, but they'll have more insight into the process, so it'll go a little smoother, is what I've experienced.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And it is a process. I think that that's really important to know that. Like, I think sometimes I have students that are like, oh, I want to ride this next week. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't work that way. You know, unfortunately, I wish it did work that way. But, you know, what is the average time that you would tell, like, let's say you're doing your first freestyle. I'm thinking quarantine now. We're still sort of in and out of quarantine. This is a great quarantine project, or when you're
definitely.
So tell us a little bit about the process, and how long would you like budget time-wise to do that?
Well, a lot of it is like, how tech savvy are you? You know, if you really like using apps and editing music, or if you even know how to just do simple stuff on GarageBand or Audacity, if you have just a basic sense of that, it's, you know, you that's usually the divide. You know, if you really don't know how to even do basics of editing or using a video camera to video your horse, or, you know, those kind of things, you'll just have to find somebody to help you with the tech aspect, which most teenagers nowadays are just as good as any of us older people. So, you know, so if you can find someone at the barn that wants to help you in exchange for some lessons or something like that, you know, I usually tell people, like, if you're doing a lower level freestyle, you know, training through first level-ish, you know, probably, you know, a couple months at least to get it to the point where you feel like you could maybe go to a show. And I always say go to a schooling show first to try it out, and then, you know, to work out the kinks, because every show you go to, there's going to be something different that happens. The sound system is terrible, or your CD doesn't want to play, or, you know, or the wind carries it the wrong direction, you can't kind of hear it, or, you know, there's all these different things. Your horse can go faster or slower or whatever. But at home, you know, the process mostly is if you can video yourself riding your horse on a good day in a steady tempo, walk, trot, canter, you can take that video, get your beats per minute, you know, by replaying the video. And there's, you know, different, I have a blog and in the book and all that stuff, it talks about how to find the beats per minute per each gait. And then once you have that number for your horse, you can start searching for music within those parameters so that, you know, you have a general direction of what's going to match your horse. Now, you know, then you have the whole, all the personality of your horse. So you might have different genres or themes would go better. But when you ride to it and you're just playing around, you save like a Spotify playlist is what I do, is I just save different playlists per each horse or rider. And then you just ride to it, and the horse really will kind of, you'll feel like what they react to, what they like, what helps you relax or gets you excited, depending on what kind of things you're going for. So getting the beats per minute is the first thing. And then I usually tell people to do choreography first if they haven't done a freestyle before, because you want to accent what you're really good at, and you want to create the routine that it's your best, like the best way to show off your horse. You know, coming in the direction that your horse feels most comfortable, turning off the center line, the way he's not going to spook at the judge, or, you know, and like maybe you do the canter first because it helps your trot work, or mixing up your walk or putting the walk at the end because your horse gets excited. Or you can really like create the choreography any way you want so that it really helps your horse. And that's better than trying to match the music where you might not help your horse. So you create your routine. That takes a little while. It depends on how often you ride. You know, if you ride like 3 or 4 times a week, you can try a routine, you video it, you try something different. And that takes, you know, that'll take you a few weeks. But if you're really diligent, you know, you can at least get a piece of it done one day, and then, okay, I really like that. And you move on to the walk the next day, and then the canter, or however you decide to put your routine. And you have that videoed from where the judge sits. So you make sure you watch that it's very symmetrical, sort of like you don't want it to look like a test, but you do want it to be easy to tell what the moves are. Cause lower level, sometimes things can look a little muddled if you try to, you know, if you're not really very clear. So you record it, and then I say, okay, then once you have your choreography and you've played around with music and you know what music you like, then you're going to match the music to the choreography. And that's where the editing is really the part that takes the longest, because you might have a song that's only fits a piece of it. Like you need maybe multiple trot music, or you have to repeat it. So there's a lot of different things that you might need to play with the music. You might get lucky and your song fits great, and you might only need 3 songs, one for each gait. But as you go higher up the level, you're going to need to play with how to accent the lengthenings or extensions, transitions and such. But, you know, I encourage people, just like, even if it's not amazing, you know, even if you can tell the transitions are still maybe a little choppy, at least, like, you know, get going, get started. You know, you can keep tweaking it as the season goes on as well, because you might get a judge that really like or you want to write it for a few judges, because some judges are not going to like your music no matter what you do, especially if you have something with good personality to it.
That's personal taste. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
that comes into it.
It's really hard because I've had a lot of clients will go to a show and they'll get feedback from the judge and they'll want to change, they'll want to change everything. I'm like, well, wait, you really like this. You and your horse love it. Try it at another show. Then they'll go to another show and a judge will love it. So, a lot of the artistic scores will vary a lot. But if you start to see a common denominator after each show, then there's an area you really have to work on. But definitely a couple months, at least. I give a lot of things in the book of like choreography and my ebooks. I try to do pre-choreographed routines. So it's like you can pick a routine if you're really bad at choreography.
If
you write it, and then you can spend time on the music part. And there are sites online you can buy pre-made freestyle music that you then have to create your choreography. So there's kind of little shortcuts. It's not always going to be the best, but it's going to get you to the end, if you have trouble in those spots.
Yeah, well, your book definitely, gives a ton of tips like this and should be really helpful for people. What else is included? Because I think it's quite an extensive book.
It kept getting longer and longer.
which is great because of all the things that it includes.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more, just sort of highlights from the book. I mean, you've got little interviews with different people who have done, a lot of showing or freestyle stuff. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I have some awesome people that I've met and known through the years, all different disciplines. My friend Marcia Sapp was just on the podcast recently talking about Western dressage, and I've helped her with freestyles over the years. So I decided to include a whole section on Western dressage because I've actually gone to the championships and watched the freestyle classes are amazing. Like there's so many people that join the classes and it's a really big deal and it keeps growing and growing. So the book includes like choreography breakdown of all the movements from, for USDF, it's training through fourth, and then in WGA it's, through level four. So, there's a lot of choreography because that's kind of what I gravitate towards more. And then there's definitely sections on how to do, all the different pieces of it, explains how copyright works as much as I could. There's a lot of a gray area when copyright is concerned with freestyle. So that took me a long time to research because actually a lot of people don't really know the clear answer to that. Even, even other judges themselves. So that was a whole thing. I had to spend a lot of time doing that. I had the interviews, like I said. I also did a lot of printouts that I created as people go through the book, they have like a checklist that they can work through or a blank page that has all the arena diagrams they can draw. So I created a lot of like kind of resources to go along with the book too that are, you can print out and use during the process. So I have that, a lot of diagrams and a lot of pictures because pictures are lots of fun. So that you feel
like
you're
involved. Yeah, a lot of pictures. It's really beautiful. Yeah. I mean,
we did a lot with that.
Oh, it's a beautiful book. It really is. And it really grabs your attention. And if you are at all interested in freestyle or want to have a little time right now, maybe you're still home. It's actually a great thing to work on and kind of get organized. And there's a lot, it's a lot of organization and a lot of planning before you even get out to the arena. So
right.
Sandra, how can our listeners find some of these resources and how can they find the book?
Yeah, I pretty much everything is right on my website, which is beginthedance.com. And I'm on Instagram at beginthedance.com too. So if you go to the website, you can enter, you can either purchase the book and there's links in the book, like the little QR codes go to, the free book resources, or if you just enter your email, you can also get a couple of the free printouts as well. So it's really easy to get things, and they can also email me from the site if they have any trouble finding anything, and I'll just email it to them. I also have a Facebook group that's really popular right now. It's a free one. You can join. It's create a dressage freestyle. It's great because people go on there and they ask questions, and they're all helping each other out during the process. So they're sharing videos and like how to's and, you know, sharing music that they want. And they kind of like, it's its own community, like that they all kind of chit chat with each other. So that's really cool too. So, you know, that's anybody can join that as well.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we are so excited to be featuring your book, Freestyles, The Ultimate Guide to Riding, Training, and Competing to Music. And you can also find From Trafalgar Square on horseandriderbooks.com. So, Sandra, yes, thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you to stay well and healthy.
Thank you so much.
Well, we're going to have a quick break from our favorite supplement company, Kentucky Performance Products, keeping my horses nice and shiny during this pandemic and all the time. And we're going to come back with one of our favorites, Olivia Lagoy-Welts.
Vitamin E is a powerful antioxidant that supports healthy muscle and nerve function by limiting cellular damage. Green grass is the best source of vitamin E for horses, but most horses don't spend enough time grazing to meet their needs. Hay, grain, and winter pasture provide little to no natural vitamin E. To ensure your horse's vitamin E requirements are met, choose Elevate. Elevate contains a readily available source of natural vitamin E. Elevate is cost-effective and easy to feed. To learn more about Elevate, visit the Kentucky Performance Products website at kppusa.com.
Well, tonight I am so thrilled to have, before she has been on the show multiple times, Olivia Lagoy-Welts on the show. Welcome, Olivia.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, we are great. And as everybody knows, we've been following you and Lono on your journey. And girl, we were ready to party in Vegas with you at the World Cup. So tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Well, we're back at home in Virginia, which is in lots of ways lovely. There's lots of green grass and it's spring and the red buds are out and the birds are cheeping. But it's a little cold and there's definitely no Vegas here. So we're just home and regrouping. I've done lots of pruning so far, lots of mowing of the fields, general spring cleaning of the house, attacking piles of paper, so on and so forth.
You're a real person too. At the end of the day, everybody, we're all horse people and own farms, and that doesn't seem to stop even with a pandemic, does it?
No. I think actually on the list of approved activities is cutting your grass. So I'm within the bounds of approved activities for the lockdown, and I have lots of grass to cut, so that's to my advantage.
I wish it wasn't on the improved lifts. That would be amazing, but I'm with you. It seems to be. So tell us, Olivia, tell us a little bit about, just so everybody knows, sort of where you were on the qualifying to Vegas, because you were pretty much going, weren't you?
Yeah. We were looking quite solid. So in order to qualify for the World Cup, you need three freestyle scores from CDIs. And so we had started our season out doing a World Cup qualifier and just saying kind of like, okay, we'll see how it goes. And if it goes well, we'll proceed with this. And, you know, if it doesn't look like it's feasible, then we'll sort of, you know, reroute our show plan. And it went really well at the first one. We got our first ever 80, and that was phenomenal. Yeah. And then came out like 2 weeks later. So that, of course, I was like, well, all right, we're definitely on the World Cup track with that. And so then the next one was just 2 weeks later, and we came out and had another great go and got just under an 80, I think 79 point something. We had like one judge that was kind of unfortunately pulled us down below another 80. But so with those two scores, like that put us like solidly into the running for that second spot. The North American League, which is the US and Canada, gets two spots for the World Cup. So Stefan was working towards, he had already had some at least one score, I think, from California for a CDIW. So he only needed two, or maybe even one. I don't quite remember. I think maybe even just one.
It all anyway, seems like such a long matter. Time yeah. ago now.
Yeah. It seems like
all the changes
ago.
In the
anyway,
world.
He was going good and he qualified. And so he for sure had a slot. And so then I was sitting basically looking very solid for the second slot. I just needed one more qualifier. And they had reorganized the show schedule this year so that that final qualifier was the last show on the Florida circuit. So we had completed those two qualifiers and then went ahead and did a Grand Prix special just so we had something, you know, that could make us eligible towards the Olympics if they, you know, needed us or if there was a spot kind of available type thing. It made it just easier for them to invite us to Europe for the rest of the Olympic qualifiers. And that went really well. Like you got his first ever 75 in the special. First 75.
Yeah.
I'm the friend cheering squad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really good year for us. So then it was just, we were just biding our time until the last show. And then that's when, you know, everything started to but there were rumblings. And my husband works in tech and he had kind of made mention, he's like, they're going to start canceling a lot of stuff a little bit before, you know, I think it was,
you saw the writing on the wall
on it. Yeah. Like, and I was a little like, you're just being fatalistic, you know, you're just raining on my parade. And like, and he was so right. And like, I hate it when he's right sometimes. Like, I love it when he's right. I like that he's smart, but I hated it that he was right in like this way. I so wanted him to be wrong.
We did too.
Right.
Yeah, we did too. Yeah. We were cheering for you. Yeah. So let us know a little bit about your, you know, preparation for such a great season. You know, what do you think were the keys to your success?
I think that, you know, we had some time off last year because of an unfortunate shoeing incident, but I think that that also really afforded us a really nice, like, easy year last year. And then so coming back into this season, like, really, really fresh and really motivated that he, I mean, not that you're not motivated before, but Lono really, like, loves to be a show horse. And so I think, you know, actually being out of the show ring for a year, even though under unfortunate circumstances, really made him very extra.
Maybe it made both of you miss it a little bit. Yeah.
More. And I think also for me, what's nice is like when you go through that and then you're kind of, you haven't ridden this horse in a little while, you know, when you have a horse that long, it's like a marriage, you know, and like your weaknesses and their weaknesses or strong points and this and that. And so when I ride a bunch of other horses and training horses and then I'm bringing him back, it really gives you a moment to really like recheck off all your basics as you're building them back up in fitness and condition. And like that you just like, you know, are you really through? Are you really genuine in your gaits? Like, are you really good on the leg? Like, you know, all of it, which like, I'm always thinking about the basics, but it's just like, it gives you such a pure approach to it, I think, like almost like a fresh perspective. And so I think that, you know, that part was really good. And I think that too, there's an element of like, I've gotten a lot of really great help, you know, in these years that, you know, he was becoming an international Grand Prix horse. And while I finished a couple other horses to Grand Prix and showed one of them, the other one I sold, you know, this was the first horse of this caliber that I've gotten the chance to have in the international ring. And so that's been a huge learning curve. And I think the break almost let me come back to it and own it a bit more so that you feel a tick more like a veteran rather than more like a newbie. And I think that also like just helped me like come to the show ring with a little bit more, you know, like ability to own it, or it gives you also the ability to step back and say like, okay, well, I know how it normally goes. How do I want it to do different? Or like, what is the difference between like a 72 or 73 and a 75 or a 76 or an 80 or, you know, that kind of thing. And it really is like, how true are they? How rideable are they? Like how, cause he does all the stuff and he does most of it, you know, quite well. It's all about how on the age they are and how through they are.
Yeah. And that's what's so interesting, right? We talk about these, this throughness literally from training level, you know, and here you are, an international rider. You've ridden at Aachen. You've been all over the world with Lono. And that at the end of the day, that's the difference between a 73 and a 75 or 78 is throughness. So we're not just preaching that because, you know, it really here, this is a perfect example of where the devil's in the details, right? And you can just, that's what you have to focus on at that point.
Hugely. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, where you talk about gates and like huge gates and this and that, and, but it all has to be rideable and it all has to be through, and that there has to be like, for it to be that repeatable, there also, even when they're hot, there has to be, I'll call it like a relaxation, and they can still be hot, but they have to be very at peace with their hotness. I don't know how to say it better than that. Like,
no, I think that's
like they get used to kind of cooking at a certain temperature and being okay with that. Cause otherwise, like, you know, it's like, they're really like going into like a state of like, not like flight, but a little bit, you know, like a horse in the field, like does not have the feeling of a horse like piaffing for a 10. Like that's more the feeling that like the cheetah is chasing them for dinner. You know, it's like, and then you're like,
I've seen Lono in that state, my friend.
Right,
I have
like,
personally
I know
seen
a cheetah
it
that wants you for dinner, but like now I want you to do that and look relaxed and like happy and floppy ears, but like legs on your tummy, sir. You know, it's really challenging what we ask them to do. You know, at that level.
So, it's true. It's very true. That's a great way to describe it. So tell us now, okay, so obviously with the pandemic, no European tour, no Olympics in Tokyo. So what's the strategy now? Now you've got to get Lono ready for next year. So what's the strategy now for you?
I think right now we take a step back and we chill for a little bit, basically. You know, I think with a top or top performing horse like him, really any horse, but especially when you go at that level, and then he is getting older, he's turning 16 this year, and he's still very, you know, fresh in a lot of ways, but like you want to try and keep him that way. So whenever you come out of competition, you know, we like to powwow with, you know, our vets, just to say like, okay, how did he come out of this? Because what you want to be careful about doing is like when you're going into letting him down, you want to make sure you like know what like you're letting down. Like, cause you can be like, oh, that was great, and give him some time off, and they may have like a little bit of like something or a small injury or whatever. But since you're not really doing anything, you don't notice. And then you go to pick him back up and you're like, oh, like I missed that. And then you're behind the eight ball. So, and I'm like, Lono's in great shape, which is fantastic, but like it's April of 2020. And like, now we're looking towards like the fall, or like really realistically, like next January. So right now there's no point in me being like, rah, like let's train. Like right now it's like, go enjoy your grass. And like, we're going to do a lot of like hill hacking and like just enjoying like being together and like you enjoying life. And like, he maintains fitness incredibly well. And so that's really fortunate.
That's a blessing.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes. Yes, it is. He's quite a naturally, kind of like higher toned muscle horse. If he was like a flop, I might have a different, like a different plan, like one that like, you know, made him stay much more cardiovascularly fit, but like, he maintains fitness incredibly well. So I can like say, okay, you know, we're going to back off and we're going to just like hack and do a, you know, a little bit of that for like a month or whatever. And, you know, and then when we pick back up, he'll be, you know, just feeling really good and fresh in his body, which is really nice. You know, that's how that works for him. Not every horse is that way.
Yeah, you gotta make an individual plan. You gotta know your horse, basically.
Absolutely.
And I know that you know him really well, so I think you can make a good plan for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Olivia, how long have you had him? For our listeners,
I have had him since he was 7.
That's what
October of his 7-year-old year. So he's now coming 16 this year, almost 10 mm-hmm. years, 9 wow. years this year.
Yeah, 9 years. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. I love it. Well, that's such a positive way to look at this and just kind of rework the game plan and, you know, be ready to come out in January when you have to be ready to kind of redo the whole. Do you know, will there be another World Cup next year or have they discussed that?
I mean, there should be another World Cup. World Cup's an annual thing. So it's not like this one got postponed. It just got canceled. So unfortunately, it won't be in Vegas next year. It'll be in Sweden. And that's too bad because I was really looking forward to riding him in front of a home crowd. And like, I know Laura was going to do a retirement for Diddy and like.
And Phil and I were going to be there hanging out in Vegas. Just saying.
We're going to be booked, there. You know, all that.
We were ready to roll. We were ready.
Aww.
Yeah, we were ready. And we would have been very loud. You would have known where we were. Just saying. Well, Olivia, we can't thank you enough for coming on the show and telling us and being very candid about kind of what the challenges are. And everyone has challenges right now. And we all have challenges when it comes to showing our horses and our dreams and goals for this year. And I think this is just a great way to say, okay, we're going to just take a little break, have some grass and get reorganized for next year. So thank you so much for coming on the show. How can our listeners find you online?
We're at mountaincrestfarm.com or even better is Olivia LaGoy Welts on Instagram.
Fantastic. Thanks, Olivia. And we can't wait to have the same discussion next year.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Phil, one of the things we're really trying to do during this pandemic is really tell everybody, as we do every week, how much we love Total Saddle Fit. I'm going to tell you, Big Mike, I have been working on trot canter transitions and getting the best trot I can. And I am relying heavily on my stability stirrup leathers. I'm just saying. I need them.
Yes. I mean, as I said earlier, just kind of back to riding and working the horses. So, you know, while we were off, all of the tack and, you know, looks beautiful because I had enough time to really take care of it and clean it and sort of you assess the stitching and all that great stuff. And all, you know, all the girths that I use look fantastic. And even better when they're clean and conditioned and looking good. And and the stirrup leathers are, I mean, they don't show anywhere at all.
No, you don't. Right? We abuse them. We work hard.
And they get a lot of use, get a little bit of abuse. And they're happy to have their conditioning and all of that. So we have to, you know, go ahead and thank Total Saddle Fit for their wonderful products and for their sponsorship of our show. You know, it's a time that maybe you can check out all the great products at totalsaddlefit.com.
And this week we're coming back with a trainer tip / listener question with Patty Mayer. We hope you enjoy.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth at totalsaddlefit.com.
Well, tonight I am so happy to have our friend Patty Mayer. She is an international rider and trainer, and she's back for our segment. We're doing third level tonight. This was a listener-inspired questions, and we're going for third level, and flying changes are always high on the list. But this started because a listener said, what are some challenges that each of you have had as training horses up the level? And Patty's been joining us. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you. Lovely to be back.
Well, we love having you, and it's just like our Thursday night party now while we're all in quarantine. So we're loving it.
Yeah.
So we're going to tackle third level. So get us started. Yes. This is a tough one.
Okay. Third level, which is a tough one, but an awesome one, because finally you get to doing like dressage.
Tricks.
Your horse.
Tricks.
Well, fun no, tricks. Not. Well, A, the tricks are more fun. So for sure, it's a way more fun level because you actually get to do stuff that's like, you know, you get to do half pass and you do flying changes, and that's just way more fun. And it's a little more challenging for the rider, and I think the horses have more fun doing it. And so, I mean, if we're going to talk about, do we want to talk about flying changes first, or we want to talk about half passes first?
Let's talk about flying changes.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's my flying change philosophy. Flying change should be like, for a horse, like bucking, but much more fun because the people like it. So, you know, because like when you buck with people, people get sad.
People
and
are
when you
sad.
Flying
yeah.
changes, when you do flying changes with people are happy. But it's the same kind of sense of joyful expression and bounding that a horse will get when it's, you know, frisky and, you know, bucking a bit. And I love flying changes for that. So horses, I just think horses get like big horsey smiles on their faces when they do changes. And I mean, all of us have had horses who had any number of issues with changes, right? You know, lots of horses are a little late behind when they start. That is fairly natural. When a horse changes in nature, they change that little, like microscopic, not like stride late behind, but they'll change that tiny bit late behind. And, you know, so we need to kind of a little bit reschool that and teach them a little bit of a different way of using their bodies. Sometimes, you know, when you teach flying changes, so sometimes, you know, they're a little bit late behind or not quite clear on it. Sometimes, of course, you know, they get the whole bucking thing going a little bit more than you'd ideally like. And so, you know, because that can happen too. And for me, teaching flying changes is about two things, other than just having the horse really enjoy it. I mean, really love it. But it's really about setting them up in a way that is based on their confirmation and then having them react. So I think you always reward a reaction, even if it's not like the best thing in the history of the world. Like when they change a little late behind or a little early behind or whatever, like at the beginning of this, it is, you know, good boy. You reacted when I put an aid on. And so for me, those are kind of big deals.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I mean, you can certainly cause a lot of problems by, how do I want to say it, being a little bit too greedy.
Yeah.
By really, you know, in the beginning saying, oh, it has to be super clean or really clean or even just clean. Like, yeah, I mean, they have to have the idea, because you've schooled probably a significant amount of counter canter and simple changes, and you know, and now all one day you woke up and decided you wanted not counter canter, not being able to go to walk to change a lead. I mean, if you want a real problem, go ahead and punish the horse for doing the wrong thing,
right?
You know, when you ask the question.
I do something, and you guys you're probably better humans than I am. You know, I actually do teach flying changes pretty early, but I teach flying changes in a very relaxed way early, and then I go back and reteach it in a more dressage-y way. So I take my baby horses, I get up in a two-point, I gallop them across the diagonal, maybe I'll do it over a pole on the ground, I open my new inside hand and move my new outside leg back, and they do a change. They do a change just like they would if you were riding over a cross pole, riding over a fence. Because I want them to learn to react, that it's okay to react to my new outside leg while they're cantering, and that's fun. And I give them a big pat, and I step into two points, and I gallop around a little more. And, you know, obviously not so bueno if your horse is naturally on the forehand. But, you know, I mean, in that mine tend to be, you know, a little bit uphill, you know, built naturally. You know, it's fine. I'm not going to get them on the forehand. I just lower their necks down, give them a big pat, and, you know, essentially gallop them over a pole on the ground and open the new inside rein and push back the new outside leg. But I'll do that when they're babies. I really will. And because I just think it's fun for them. When I really go to teach flying changes, when they're, you know, when they're kind of a good solid, you know, beginning of second level and really having a sense about what collection is and the sense of a half halt, then I do start with a much more classical approach. So I do start with canter, walk, canter, but I do it in a fairly specific way. Most of my horses historically have been pretty forward. So I do use the wall on the short side to back them up a little bit. So I will do a figure eight towards the short side wall, and or to, you know, my arena actually doesn't have, except for on the short side where I have mirrors, I don't have any fencing. So something that's going to give them a visual, back them off a little bit. And then I do canter, walk, change, bend, canter the other lead. If they start anticipating it, I don't do the walk. After I've done the, after I've done that with canter, basically a figure eight, canter, walk, canter, I will do a figure eight where I'm going to just, then I'll do, let's say you're on the left leg, in that same kind of part of start of a figure eight, I'll do that, and then I'll counter flex, but stay cantering the correct lead. So if I'm tracking left, if I'm on a little bit of left 10 meter circle, I'll flex them to the right and keep cantering left. And until they'll do that, they'll hold, they'll allow me to access, to hollow their new, what's going to be the new lead side, I won't try a change until they really allow me to hollow that. Then I go in and I'll do that towards the mirror and I'll ask for the change.
And Patty, and Phil too, like, I think before you start doing flying changes, what are some things that you need to, what are some benchmarks, right? Like for me, I need to be able to do canter walk, and I need to be able to do canter walk, counter canter walk, and be able to activate either hind leg. So that, those are some things like for me, because I see, especially with my eventers, they teach the horses way too early. And then I this happened to me today. I have a would have been a 5-star horse that has, he learned changes far too early in the wrong balance. And it has taken us a year and a half to fix it. And we're, a long time, because it was taught incorrectly because he really wasn't ready to do the changes. So what are some benchmarks for you guys?
Canter walk canter for sure. I am less obsessed with counter canter than most people.
Yeah.
Because, and again, this goes back to kind of the original listener question, which was, what are some of your personal experiences? I just, when I was not a kid, but, you know, certainly a young adult, there was a wonderful horse who I rode who could counter canter a 6-meter Volte. And he was just like, dude, got the counter canter. And you could never get him essentially off balance enough to change. So he was so good at the counter canter that he never felt comfortable changing. He was also a neurotic horse, but whatever. So I don't necessarily, for me, need to be able to go like on the straight side, canter, walk, counter, canter, walk, canter, walk, counter, canter, walk. I do want them balanced, but I want them to, my bigger test is, do they react off of my leg? And so for me, when you're doing the walk transitions, they need to be sharp enough. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that in a, ooh, mommy wants something fun, in a kind of forward and happy and refreshing sort of way. So before I ask, does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, I totally see what you're getting at though.
Yeah.
How about you, Phil? What are some things for you?
Yeah, actually, what I like to teach while I'm sort of working on the changes is to be able to leg yield the horse in canter, introduce the idea of counter flexion leg yield. So I think it's pretty important, and I think you touched on this a little bit, Patty, is that you actually have to take the horse out of balance for a quick stride to encourage them to do something different, which is a fly. I mean, you know, you watch them in the field, and the horses will do flying changes in the field. Well, what is the thing that happens prior or during their flying change? They are out of balance. And then they just change their lead because there's a better way to do this. And they already know that in their head. So, you know, I like to be able to be in control and to be able to push them around a little bit and to have more access to their body. So it's not necessarily counter canter? I mean, they should be able to counter canter, and they should be able to do the canter walk canter. But you know, in my experience, and I've watched a lot of lessons, and I've trained, horses. There's a lot of different ways to teach flying changes. Everybody sort of has their own little niche way, and and it works. You know, for them, it works because they understand what they want out of the balance or the unbalance or the reaction that they are looking for. So there's a lot of different, I don't think there's a lot of wrong ways to teach the flying change. Every time I talk to somebody or I watch somebody teach a lesson on flying changes, I get a new idea and I just add that to my toolbox and I move forward. And hopefully the idea is in the right way. And through a lot of experimentation, I've been able to teach a lot of different horses flying changes. So I think there's a lot of ideas and there's a lot of ways to do it. And I think for anybody who is going to do this, you know, at home with a horse, I think it takes eyes on the ground for sure, because it's really hard to feel what's going on and what's wrong, what's right. I use videotape for myself. I use have a beautiful arena to ride in with mirrors and the whole deal, because it's just a really hard thing to do. And it's hard. It's the easier counter canter gets for the horse, the harder it is to do a flying change. So I'm with Patty on teaching it, you know, pretty early, because it's natural for the horse, and not to drill counter canter too much. And if you know, I'm riding that counter canter serpentine from one of the tests, and the horse throws in a flying change, boom, I'm happy. I'm praising. We're going to take a walk break, you know?
Like, exactly.
Never will I punish a horse for throwing in a flying change, because God, I know how hard it is later on when they're really good at counter canter.
Yeah. Right.
So there's two sides of that coin, right? They have to be able to do counter canter.
But here's, I mean, for me, if I were to say the one thing that I think, I shouldn't say that everyone does, but I think the one universal kind of dressage-y thing that creates clean changes is to be able to get them, to hollow them away from the leg you're going to change to. So if you're on the right lead, they have to be able to get hollow on the left side prior to you asking for the left lead. And I feel, and again, reasonable minds can differ on this, and I'm not telling you I'm going to be perfect on this. I try super, super hard to not throw my body around. I try super hard to give a correct aid. If I need to back that up with a little bit of a tap with the whip or a little bit of a slightly sharper leg aid, then, you know, that I want to end up with when I'm at Grand Prix, okay, but I try super hard to give a correct aid, to give correct position and a correct aid. And I know that's incredibly difficult, because we sort of get them a little off balance to change, even though that's a, you know, a secret. But you'll see, you know, some of the best, you know, some are really great riders in the United States and great trainers, and sometimes me too, will throw their upper body over to help the horse get the change, just to give them the idea at the beginning. And I have to tell you, for me, because then I get in a personal bad habit of doing stuff like that. So I try to not do it for myself, but I also want to make sure that they're, you know, we're teaching Pavlov's dog to drool, right? That I'm giving the same aid each time. So to me, there are, you know, I think these things kind of go in, you don't necessarily, when you start flying changes, you don't necessarily have this kind of upward trajectory the whole time, right? So you can start with some clean changes, and then maybe they're going to get a little late behind for a few weeks, and then they're going to go back to being clean. What I don't want to see in any horse is that they become chronically late behind, or that they become upset. And to me, those are the two things that I think you need to nip in the bud. So, I mean, I did have a student who, happily, the horse is a Grand Prix horse now, thank goodness. But when I first started teaching her, and she's a good professional, I mean, but this one horse of hers just had chronically late changes both directions. He was just late behind both directions. And it really was because she hadn't been setting him up enough, and because he wasn't sharp enough to her new outside leg, So when she asked, he was like a little bit ho-hum about the whole process.
Yeah.
So we did do a little bit of what Phil is talking about, at least I think you're talking about, which is we leg yielded away from, so if you're on the left lead, we leg yielded towards the left to hollow the right side.
Yeah. Then yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. That's
then a big half halt and ask.
Yeah.
So we really had to get him to understand that, you know, an aid meant you actually had to do something. And we did that throughout his work. He was just one of those horses who was just a little bit dull. And so, and what he had done with her, and again, I think this is just, you know, a problem everyone has on occasion, especially with a horse who isn't naturally spicy, you know, he was a little bit dull. So she got to moving a little bit more. So he got duller. So she moved more. So he got duller. Well, by the time you get to changes, like that is no longer any fun.
No, good luck. Yeah, good luck.
And it's a, you know, and it's a 17 two-hand horse. And like, it was all just, you know, it was a little bit like watching molasses flow very slowly down a tree in a very good way.
But I think too, this is a perfect example. I mean, we're all professional riders, and this is a time where I absolutely lean on my friends, because there's some horses that get it no problem. And there's other ones it just takes a long time. And, you know, it just, every horse that I've ever taught changes to, it's, everything's a little bit different. And that's what's nice, to have a team behind you. And again, if you're by yourself, this is tough. I mean, it is really hard. You really need to be able to do kind of the things Phil was talking about as well, like video yourself, et cetera, because this is the base of what you will ride changes at every level from third level on, at a lot of them. So you gotta, you know, lean on some friends or lean on your professional at this moment. And because I think we all have had situations where horses haven't been taught correctly, and it's one of the hardest things to fix as you go through.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's as simple as getting, you know, your husband, your child, your whatever, to stand by the side of the arena and say, clean, late, clean, late. Yeah. They don't have to say a lot.
And you know what it is. Yeah.
But they need to say it immediately, and they need to be super tough. So it can't be, they can't say clean when it's a half a stride late behind. They need to actually tell you what's going on. And, and so if you teach your next door neighbor what to look for, it's not like, it's hard to see when a flying change is clean or not. That's super easy to see. And then, you know, later you need to, of course, deal with straightness and other things. And I am actually a big believer in having and you guys, again, may totally disagree. I mean, I can teach flying changes to a cow. It's just something I can do. With that said, I'm a big believer in having the ultimate owner rider person who's going to compete the horse, teach the horse flying changes, because flying changes are absolutely personal. We all aid them a little bit differently. Not that Reese couldn't get on my horse or Phil couldn't get on my horse and do a line of ones. You could, but it's as when a horse is at the beginning of their career, it takes a while for them to distinguish between body types. So it's, you know, every horse has a little bit of a different issue. Like my Grand Prix horse Cato, he gets his neck high and a little bit, I was about to say high and short, but that's not quite right. His neck comes higher and he climbs in front when he does changes. And so one of the issues with him is, and always has been and always will be, keeping his neck long and low. And I don't mean long and low like you're doing a stretchy circle, but lower than his tendency.
Yeah, you gotta be thinking about bringing the horse a certain way, because he has a tendency to go the other way.
And in fact, he was a horse who, and I, you know, I'm not telling tales out of school. He's a horse who I bought from a dealer at half the price that they were originally asking, because he was a 7-year-old horse without a single change either direction, and a good horse dealer. I mean, good trainer, rider, all those things. And they just couldn't get a change on him because the way they ride, which is totally classical and lovely, is horse needs to be collected, pole needs to be the highest part, and you ask from a collected canter. And because this particular horse, like, he wakes up in the morning that way, and he has big gaits, And so he actually couldn't change through because his neck was too high.
Right.
And the minute, and I literally got a change on him the first day I went to try him out, because I got to a point, kicked him into a canter, canter across the diagonal, and got a flying change on him because I just lowered the neck. And he was like, oh, that's what they've been asking. I can do that. And so I think you have to be very aware of your horse's conformation.
Right. And you have to be a little bit brave to be able to do that.
I think outside the box too. Yeah. All those things, it's hard. And that's why, you know, third level is a challenge, you know, and this is a good reason because, you know, let's do a real quick 30-second half pass.
Ooh, okay. So half passes. Half passes, again, I think they're really a fun thing for horses. The key is, of course, to keep them, you know, wrapped around your inside leg and keep the canter beautiful. I mean, I just think that the place where people get messed up is thinking it needs to be super, super, super collected. And then they actually get like some weird 4-beat canter. It needs to be a buoyant, lovely jump across canter. And then all it is, you know, a haunches in on an oblique line. So you start it by thinking a little shoulder four, and then you point your horse's head and neck towards the letter you're going to arrive at. You look through their ears. You essentially do a haunches in towards that. The shoulders should be leading a little bit. And once they, I mean, I've never seen a horse that could do a shoulder in that couldn't do a half pass. And I'd say that the only time horses have a real big problem with half pass is when the riders are blocking them. In particular, by sitting a little to the outside. Mm-hmm. Not that there isn't a reason to do that sometimes, but
people get stuck there.
Yeah,
people get stuck. And I was actually watching a 30-year-old, probably 25 or 30-year-old video of Robert teaching me on my Grand Prix horse Exact, Robert Dover teaching me. And, you know, this was when he was my very successful Grand Prix horse. So yay. But he was literally like, Patty, when you half pass right, could you please just drop your right ear over? Oh, look, the horse goes better.
Yeah, there you go.
And you think, I wish like that's easy.
Yeah.
Because I was just sitting just that itsy bit against the horse. And so suddenly it was just like horses slow to the crop. You're like, oh, okay.
It's true.
So to me, it's about positioning and not panicking.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. For my two cents about the half pass is that don't ride a half pass like it's a sideways exercise.
Yes.
It's just a bending exercise. Mm-hmm. And never compromise the quality of the horse's gait or balance to push them sideways.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's the biggest mistake is people, you know, start on one wall, look over like so kind of in a sideways way and then just start going there. And no, that's a leg yield with the wrong bend. And that's not what a half pass is.
Right. Go on.
And I was just going to say, and then if you do that, the quality of your trot and your canter will start to be less and then less and then less and then less. And then you have a whole bunch of stuff to fix when you reach the other line or the other wall or the center line or whatever. So just remember, stay true to your gait. Mm-hmm. Just bend the horse around your inside leg. If you point him in the right direction, he'll go there and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I know. I mean, it's just like that, right?
But I think that one thing that, you know, it's like if you feel like you're not getting, there are two exercises I love for half pass. One is if you feel like you're not getting enough bend, so you're half passing the right, you feel like you're not getting enough bend, leg yield left. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean run the horse sideways. I mean, help the horse understand that your inside leg has a meaning in the half pass. If you feel like you're getting stalled out or like you're getting a nice consistent 6 or 7 on the half pass, but you are interested in seeing if you might be able to get an 8, I am a big believer in medium trot, half pass, medium trot, half pass, all on the same line. So you keep the head and neck on the same line. Let's say you're going to do it MXK. Mm-hmm. Head and neck are towards K, and you're going to go, let's say medium, and then just dance that into a half pass and dance that into a medium and dance that into a half pass. And again, assuming you don't pull back, assuming you're just riding a nice forward thing, suddenly the horse is like, oh my God, that was so much fun. Thank you, mommy, for letting me express myself through motion.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah.
Well, Patty, as always, we love when you come on. We still have more levels to go, but how can our listeners find you online if they have any more questions on third level?
Okay. So I have, so they can find me through Facebook. So it's Patty Mayer. My email is the same as my barn name, which is Bailiwick House. So it's Bailiwick, Bailiwick House, House, at gmail.com. And my cell phone is 310-729-3365.
Fantastic. Thanks, Patty. We look forward to next week. Well, Phil, as always, we love email and Facebook shout outs. If you can, send us some workout ones.
Tell us how your workouts are going.
Tell us how your workout's going. We would love that. Or if you didn't jump on the DRT bandwagon, if you're doing some at-home workout and feeling the burn like Phil and I are, please send them. We get a kick out of it. And if we want, we'll post it on the page. And if not, we'll just get an internal laugh for sure. Well, as always, the United States Dressage Federation is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org for more information. That's www.usdf.org, the online destination for dressage. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email, and I like emails, is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is on Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a good show, and don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
As always, keep your heels down, your shoulders back, your chins up for this global pandemic. And we hope you stay well and safe. And we're thinking about you. Have a great week.